good afternoon.
Well, it is a good afternoon.
It's the day we get to talk about the Owen brothers. I'm so excited.
Oh, you've been talking about this all week. This has got to be a barn burner.
It's the story of the year. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got archives stretching back into the far beyond, back to, I don't know, 2010-ish.
Back to the Obama administration.
And all the fun that that brought us. Many, many stories on many, many topics. You can find our emails and phone numbers and all that right on the page at wethepeopleradio.us. Hope you'll go there. The archives after the fact, like usually Sunday afternoon, pop up commercial free, courtesy of Robert Exter. Thank you for that, Robert. And, yeah, we try to bring you stuff that's maybe in the news, but not covered on the front page, or if it is, it's really brief. And this story today is one of those stories. It's been brewing since February. And so our guest, Chuck Floyd, is the chief executive officer with Security Solutions Technology. I don't know why I have such a hard time with that. I bungle it every time. I should practice. And they are a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, and that would be where the Owen brothers come in, and security assessments, cybersecurity, geospatial, program and lifecycle management, change management, logistics, and financial consulting. And these guys are great. We have them on periodically, and they give us all sorts of what's real about the border wall and all that, but Chuck Floyd has some information on the Owen brothers. And if you haven't been following that story,
it's going to blow your mind.
You're just missing out, because this is like drip, drip, drip. It's been going on since February, and it's finally kind of getting somewhere. So good afternoon, Chuck. What do you have for us?
How are you doing today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I've been waiting to find somebody who had, you know, because, I mean, I've been following all the Daily Caller stories that come out. Every time I get an update from those guys, I just give a quick scan, you know, because it never fails. I've actually listed all their
We got it all on the
their
site.
List of stories. I actually put it on the website for today, because a lot of it's complicated. I mean, it involves 79 members of the House, and they've got a nice chart on there, and so I don't know where you want to start with this thing or how you want to lay it out, so we'll just follow along.
Yeah. Well, what I like to do is, you know, this thing reads like a mystery spy novel.
It does.
Oh, it's going to be a TV movie.
You just couldn't write this kind of stuff, you know. And first off, I'd like to really tell the listeners who he is. Right now, you know, he is a 38-year-old. But when he was 14 years old, living in Pakistan, he filled out an application for a U.S. program that provides limited green cards through a lottery system. That's the visa lottery. And then his family was chosen. So he arrived in the U.S. at 17, got a job working at a fast food restaurant, went to a community college in Northern Virginia, then he transferred to Johns Hopkins up in Baltimore and earned a degree in information technology. Then in 2004, he became a citizen. And at that time, Representative Robert Wexler, a Democrat from Florida, hired him as an intern from an intern company that he was working on in IT as a part of his staff. And he was brought on as a kind of a part-timer, shared, and I put, you know, that in parentheses, shared employee with other Democrats. And so it gets very interesting from this point of, one, how he got here, and then, two, how he got into the Congress through Wexler's office.
So I assume during this conversation we're going to talk about how or if he was screened at all before he was given access to House servers. I mean, you just throw him the keys and say, fire it up and see what you can do?
Well, and he was also, he ran the password and all that for the DNC, right?
Well, yes, he's done a lot of that. So, it's really illegal on how he was hired and given access to everything. He was brought in, again, as I said, as a shared employee. Now, the Inspector General's office has said that this kind of shared employee is illegal and is not according to the House rules. And so he was able to bring in his brother, his wife, his friends. I mean, he brought in numerous people under this shared employee access into the House through the Democrats.
Now, when you say brought in, are you saying he brought them in as employees? I mean, were they getting paid?
Oh, absolutely, they were getting paid.
Wow.
And so that kind of leads me to my second little background discussion, if you would just give me a few minutes to kind of go through this.
Sure.
As far as what happened. You know, again, what does he have on the previous DNC chair? What was she trying to hide?
Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She directed other Democrat congressional members. It was 30-plus members that she directed them to hire him and his family members and friends to do IT and other things in their offices, and they never even saw these people. And so you're talking about collusion and a scam. She was trying to protect him and further his aspirations with taxpayer funds. And so, you know, she was using this collusion, using taxpayer funds to cover up the issues she was trying to hide. She went out of her way to protect him with his IT job and also hundreds of thousands of dollars of missing computer equipment, iPads, all iPhones, all kinds of things, funneling money into his bank account. And, of course, this is OPM, other people's money. Now, Representative Louie Gohmert is doing an investigation on this issue as we speak, and he needs to continue it and then refer this to the DOJ for a formal criminal investigation that includes all of Anwan's family, the previous DNC chair, Deborah Osman Schultz, the Democrats who hired his family members because they were in collusion with them, along with the House IT section, because the House IT section never really properly did their job. And so, I mean, there's a lot going on. Then when he was, you know, he traveled to Pakistan, his brother traveled to Lebanon. And so when they used their laptop computers, they had to go through communication networks that are provided by and monitored by Pakistan, Iran, and other enemies of the United States. I've worked at the State Department before, and we built embassies, and so we had to deal with diplomatic security, communications, all kinds of other things. And so one of the things you learn very quickly is wherever you are overseas, whatever communication networks you go through, they're not yours. They're not secure. And guess what? You're monitored.
So what was on his laptop was basically accessible to these other networks, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Through his network, they could, you know, when he would use his laptop and he would go through their communications networks, and so they would monitor him, and so Iran, Pakistan, Russia, all kinds of other actors around the world could get access through his computer, and then they would have access through the House computers. And so if you look at Equifax and other big corporations that have been hacked, they've been hacked through people that have used their computers off-site with their kids and other things, and then they would get in through them, and then they would get in through the networks. And
right.
So this guy was, he and his whole family were a huge security risk, and, you know, they were just never controlled at all.
Was there any oversight as far as him being the IT guy and having access to God knows what? Was there any oversight to what he could actually download onto his laptop and remove from the building?
From what I gather, there was very little oversight of any congressional IT supervision of him. You know, whatever he could download, he did. And, you know, for an example, the investigators at the House found that he and his family and friends logged into just one server of the Democratic caucus more than 5,700 times in a seven-month period, and only 300 of these access to the server were authorized. So what I'm saying is that he, his friends, and then when the characters, either Pakistan, Iran, Russia, whoever, then they went through their networks, and then they got into the congressional networks.
Now, were they able to trace that, or were they able to go back and, you know, retrace his footsteps and see what he was doing or what he was looking at?
I'm sure that they have. I would assume that they have. I do not know that. That's why Louie Gohmert and his committee have to refer this to the DOJ so that FBI and other investigators can really look at this and see what was going on. But I'm here to tell you today that the computer systems in Congress are not secure.
Wow.
And, you know, I recently bid on a cyber RFP for the House and was not selected. In my opinion, the IT folks there don't want any fresh eyes on what's going on there, you know, because they know that they are not secure, and they know that they've had the policies and procedures that have not secured their networks and made their networks more vulnerable than they should be.
Yeah, because you have House IT, which is, you know, an option, and they handle certain things. And then a lot of members of the House hire companies that provide the IT for them. They're not actually they're not part of that House IT staff.
Yeah,
but they all have to follow the same rules. And still, some of the things that the members of Congress or their staff or their field offices, they still have to go through House IT periodically. So those kind of things are kind of intertwined, and there are a boatload of rules. I mean, this isn't this isn't a geek squad, you know, where you just call some kid in a polo shirt who comes over. I mean, there are a lot of rules. I'm blown away at how these guys were able to get started. We need to take a really quick break, but when we come back, can you talk a little bit about what started the unraveling? Because the first story I have is from February 4th of this year.
Right.
So I'd be curious to hear when that actually really started. We'll be back with our guest, Chuck Floyd. We're talking about the Owan brothers.
Send them to prison. When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul.
That can be Mr. Owan's, song when he goes to court. They can play that in the background. Good Lord. So Chuck, when did this whole thing start? I mean, it started for the public in February when the Daily Caller started, you know, releasing bits of this as it came out. But how long have, you know, you guys known about all this?
Yeah, well, this has been going on for quite some time. And also, I want to be transparent up front. I work with CrowdStrike, FireEye, you know, a lot of cyber companies and others that are in this industry. And so, again, you know, I have a lot of details which you know, a lot of people just don't have. But
we're counting on it.
I would say that back in 2012, the U.S. government observed Abd Owan, his brother, in Beirut, Lebanon, talking with some political figures that the U.S. had been tracking for a long time. associated with Hezbollah and other things. And so then in 2013, 2014, again, a lot of his family members were being hired. And again, it just makes no sense. In 2014, the youngest Alwan's sibling, Jamal, joined the payroll at age 20, had no IT background, and got a salary of $160,000.
So how does he join the payroll? Who would hire him? I mean, just he walks in and turns in an application.
That is the big question. That's why I keep saying that Debbie Lawson Schultz has something that she does not want exposed. He knows it, and so she forced all these Democrats from Tammy Duckworth, you name it.
There are 79 of them. I mean, that's a lot.
It's huge. I mean, it's huge.
But are those and the so people who would actually say, okay, put him on the payroll?
Yes. Yeah. Or a family member.
Them,
yeah.
They put him on the payroll, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz told them, you put these people on your payroll, put them as the shared part-time
shared,
people.
Okay.
They did. They gave him, you know, $100,000, $160,000 salaries. They made $5 million from
Holy
all these Democrats.
God.
And so
they were getting paid more than members of Congress.
That's right. Absolutely. And so, I mean, you take a top lawyer on these committees and on these congressional staff, they don't even make that much money.
and the one brother was working at McDonald's during all this because he really wasn't an IT
that's
guy.
Right. That's right. Absolutely. And so if you go back to 2016, there were reports out of Representative Clark's office, Democrat New York, about IT equipment being missed. And so they were stealing iPads, all kinds of computers. They were having to deliver it to their home address. And, you know, none of the Democrats knew it because they didn't question it. They just put them on the payroll and it would just let them go. And so the investigators find out that they were having IT equipment delivered to their house, never showed up in Congress, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of iPads, iPhones, all kinds of stuff. Then if you look at all of the connections to the servers that they were doing, thousands of connections to the servers, were they downloading information from the servers on the iPhones and iPads and then taking those to Pakistan and other places?
Wow. And no questions asked.
No questions
so
asked.
It begs the question, what were they trying to hide and what did they not want people to know to allow this to happen?
That's right. I mean, even in May 12th, 2016, you know, we saw an email from Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying that Congresswoman Pelosi is doing a closed-door meeting, no staff or anyone allowed. However, we need her iPad from Iran. So he had Pelosi's iPad. He had all the codes. He had everything. And so, again, you just go back and figure out, you know, why does this guy have so much power, so many controls on everybody at the DNC and all the Democrat congressional, even some Senate members? And you just shake your head. I mean, today there are lots of new technologies that we're looking at to break this up so nobody has complete control of everything. So, I mean, it just goes back and you just kind of look at the timeline of things. And even when Seth Rich was hired in 2014, and then look at the emails and different things that happened after that, it makes you wonder what happened to him, really, in July 16th when he was killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His mother said that there had been a struggle. His hands were bruised, his knees were bruised, his face was bruised, and he had two shots in his back, yet they never took anything. I know that from people that I talked to who are very wired in certain IT sources, you know, we know that Julian Assange said that the Russians never hacked the DNC. And that, you know, to me, that's a fact. It wasn't being wasn't the Russians that hacked the DNC. And so how was Juan tied up in this? Did he know what was going on with Uranium One? Did he know what was going on with the Trump dossier? What other illegal schemes and things that the DNC was he covering up, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was covering up and protecting him?
Yeah, and then her defense of him, well, throughout, she had him on the payroll until the day he was picked up at the airport trying to flee the country. But
that is correct.
She defended him, saying this was all a witch hunt because he was Muslim, so this was all, you know, what do you call it, racism.
That's right.
They couldn't do sexism because he was a man. But
if you remember that video with the Capitol Police and her, where she the Capitol Police.
She wanted those hard drives.
Laptop.
The Capitol Police that they were insensitive, they were racist, and everything else. Why did she go to this extent to protect this guy and cover up what he was doing?
Well, she was making a big deal out of getting those laptops back from them, so made it look like there was something on there she did not want them to see.
If she didn't get that laptop back, there would be consequences.
Yeah.
And so you know, she was obviously hinting at, you know, I'm going to screw up your budget. But
that's right.
How bizarre, and why would you do that?
Yes. And so there's lots of espionage going on there. She's covering up. She did not want the Capitol Police, the IG, or anybody else to figure out what they were doing. And, you know, I submit to you and your listeners that a lot of the stolen equipment ended up in Lebanon, Pakistan, different areas with a lot of information on it that was downloaded. You know, and again, you know, I'm not on the inside, so I can't tell exactly what was taken, but, you know, when you access the servers almost 6,000 times and only 300 times are authorized, you know that a lot of people are getting access that shouldn't have access and getting information that they shouldn't have.
So when you say only 300 were authorized, how was he able to access it not being authorized? Was he hacking in?
Because they had access through stolen passwords, through their hacking mechanisms, through the laptops of him and his family and friends.
Okay, so that tells you right there they were going in and looking for stuff that they weren't supposed to be into.
Well, but they explained that. Yeah. It was about his kids' homework.
Oh.
They were doing it because there's
that's right. I forgot about that.
I literally have listed all the, I didn't count them, but a bunch, all the Daily Caller stories. And one of them, I can't find the title right now, but it was all about how they were just accessing the server because of their kids' homework. That was all. Yeah. Nothing. No problem. But some of the members, I listed them on here. There's a chart, a really handy chart at most of the articles. It shows you, whether it was Imram, Abid, Jamal, Imram's wife, Hina, Natalie, there's some lady named Talia. So there's a bunch of them. They color-coded it and showed you what years, which one worked for which member of the house. But you have a lot of high-powered people. You got Xavier Barra, Chris Bell. You have Jim Costa, Wasserman Schultz, obviously. You've got some of them that we're hearing about a lot now. Sandy Levin, Tim Ryan. I was flipping down here because you've got what's her face with the hats, Frederica Wilson, Joe Don, the hat lady. Oh, Jackie Spear. Rahm Emanuel, huh? You have a whole ton of people on here that are in all different states. I mean, Louisiana, California, Texas, Florida. They're all over the country, but the only thing they have in common is they're all Democrats. House Democratic Caucus. You know, they worked for them.
Yeah, and so if you go back to 2011, Natalia Sofa, she was from Ukraine. She was Abid's wife. She worked for Theodore Gilchrist's office, Democrat out of Florida, and then she was allowed to work off-site. And so how many full-time IT workers get to work off-site?
Right.
Yeah, because if you're an IT worker, what are you doing off-site? Because your work is on-site.
Yeah. And again, if you track all of their financial ups and downs from 2004 or 5 through 2010, where they went bankrupt, they got bought several houses, this and that. I mean, you know, he had a, you know, in 2010, he bought Cars International A. So the you know, in, you know, these Cars International A, their code is CIA.
Yeah.
run by his brother. And then that went bankrupt, and it owed more than $1 million. And you look at this doctor, Ali Atwar's business and how he was sued by Department of Human Health and Human Services for distributing all kinds of different drugs and things. I mean, it's just a soap opera of who's who and who they're dealing with, and all their financial ups and downs. And no wonder they were stealing equipment and selling it so they could, you know, stay alive.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They also had, they got like $100,000 from some guy who had ties to Hezbollah?
Yes.
Yeah. And that was with the car business, I think.
That's right. That was at the car business. That's right. And so he was a partner with them.
Wow. So,
and he tied into Hezbollah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, there's almost nothing that these guys didn't intersect, although I can't find anywhere where somehow they've roped Donald Trump into this. Somehow he's remained unscathed in this particular drama. But we'll be right back. We've got to take a really swift break, and we will return with Chuck Floyd. In the meantime, I really do hope you go to the website, because the chart and some of the things that lay out are good visual. That is at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Looking at the chart, that was kind of like the Debbie Wasserman Schultz IT song.
She still wants him.
She still wants him, because he's worked for her the entire time. And when you look at that from 2004 on, all the way to the bitter end.
Yeah, she just had to cut him loose because he was missing too much work.
Because he was going to jail. He was going to be wearing an ankle bracelet. He couldn't get through security.
Chuck, how much... I don't know if you know this or not, but with all these people he had contact with, was there any threat to the Pentagon system? I mean, did he have access to anything that would have been top secret military-wise?
Well, I don't know whether he had anything top secret or not, but again, a lot of the DOD members of DOD coordinate with Congress all the time. And so you're going to see emails from members of DOD, State Department, White House, you name it, going in and out of the congressional email computer system, their enterprise system.
Mm-hmm.
And so whoever would have access could download all this information. Then they can use that, because they will see who's at DOD, who's at State Department, who's at White House, who's at all these other agencies. Then they go track them. They are families. They are friends. And so that's how, you know, the hackers and state-sponsored terrorists get access to DOD and other areas. You know, DOD, you know, they get, what, a million hits a day of people trying to hack them. And so by having all of this information, it is very dangerous, because now state-sponsored terrorists such as Iran, Pakistan, and others will know who is at these different locations. And then by knowing that, then they can go attack them through their social networks.
Right. Right. Well, the blackmail implications on something like this are off the chart. I mean, when you have access to somebody's email, I mean, every single thing that's transmitted through email, that's huge.
Well, the other thing to remember is that members of Congress and their staff, their emails aren't available through the Freedom of Information Act. Those correspondences back and forth are confidential communication. With their constituents.
They used to be.
Yeah. In the olden days, they were confidential communication.
Yeah, there was a little guy in a cave in Pakistan.
So it isn't like, well, it's no big deal. So what if they sold these or got rid of them or whatever? You know, they're available anyway. They're not. And the only way they'd be available is if they were under scrutiny by federal police. You know, if they had committed a crime, then their stuff could be snapped open. But to have all this stuff out there, you know, everything they're working on legislatively, committee.
Well, yeah, a lot of these guys are on pretty high-powered committees that are talking about stuff that isn't public.
Well, besides that, people are emailing their members of Congress because they're having difficulty with a federal agency. So most of the stuff they're dealing with is confidential.
Right. And if you go look at what Louis Gohmert and Luke Lossing from the Daily Caller said, you know, Representative Gohmert asked him if all of these family members and associate work in IT, and Luke's answer was there are indications that they didn't. I mean, for an example, you know, he hired his 20-year-old brother who was in college, and then he asked him if Anwar spent much time in Pakistan. He said, yeah, 3 to 4 months a year, and that he was accessing the congressional servers remotely. And so, again, you know, you have so much evidence of what was going on and who was doing what to whom, that it's just unbelievable that the House IT staff, the people in charge, did not know what was going on and do something about it. To me, they have a very poor system, because if you are monitoring your networks, you know every endpoint that is monitored, and you should have the tools, because we have plenty of tools to monitor this and figure out who's doing what, how many people are accessing, and how many times does one particular email or one person access a system. That's just like, you know, several years ago, I think it was like three years ago, the IRS sent over 20,000 returns to the same address in Atlanta, Georgia. Well, tell me that's not correct, and, you know, that they should be monitoring that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, sure, and they also wanted, as early as the beginning of July, Luke at Daily Caller had written here, House Dem IT suspects wanted untraceable payments.
Mm-hmm.
So they were getting paid in untraceable funds.
Mm-hmm. Just like Obama giving Iran cash.
Gosh, it is a lot like that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, here you go. Capitol Police revoked the Awan's access to the congressional IT system in February of 2017 after a major data breach was detected. Now, apparently, like you're saying, it goes back to 2012. So after 5 years, they finally figured it out when the Daily Caller started publishing it that they had an IT breach. But if you look at the chart of who was working for members of the House, they all continued to work past that point for many of them. And like I said, for Wasserman Schultz, to the bitter end.
Yes. And so she had directed them to do that. And so what was going on was Anwar would have all his family and friends with these jobs. And guess who they were paying a lot of this money back to? it was him. And so they would keep, I have a $160,000 salary. You know, they'd keep 100 and they would ship 60,000 back to him. I mean, you know, it's just a.
And bunches,
you know,
of it left the country. Thing. They didn't have, these guys didn't have bank accounts commensurate with the money they were making.
That's right.
Their funds were basically disappearing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And if you look at what he was doing, he even had the House Federal Bank or whatever it's called, loan him money, and he shipped, you know, over almost $300,000 to Pakistan.
And, you know, it's just, you can't even make this up. And yet these guys, these are the same, you know, these are the same people beating the drum on Russia and, you know, all this other stuff that that they're all worked up about. Meanwhile, they've handed the keys to the city along with a ton of taxpayer money to these guys that are Pakistani.
Mm-hmm.
And not they're not even going to work.
That's right.
I just
they don't even show up. I mean, I would assume that most of these Democrat congressmen, men and women, never knew by face or by name who was on their payroll. They were told, you will do this. They did it. They never saw them. They never had anything from them. And so, again, it was a scam using taxpayers' money, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz should be held accountable for this, along with the collusion of the Democrat congressional members, because they went along with it and they had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, right.
Total incompetence. Do you have any guess on what it is now that Wasserman Schultz is trying to keep out of the public eye? What is she hiding?
Now, Chuck's an IT professional, so he would have to give us a supposition. We don't want him to guess. Oh, sorry.
Well, you know, you just got to read the newspapers, and you say, oh, it must be this and this, or get, you know, everything from, you know, the Clinton emails, the IRS, the Uranium One, the Fast and Furious, Benghazi.
I know, look at
all the Obama-era corruption issues. I mean, so you just got to go back and look at that, and I'm sure he had access to all that information coming out of the DNC.
Wasserman Schultz was the head of the DNC, and he set up the iPad that ran the DNC, so he had the administrative password to the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
And here they're like, oh, the Russians hacked it. It's like, what?
Well, you handed it to them.
You gave it to a Pakistani national who was funneling money overseas in business with Hezbollah. I mean, what the hell?
Wow.
Well, the Russians didn't hack the DNC, I can tell you that. I mean, you know, from what I know of my sources. And so, I mean, I think they need to go to England and ask the one who really knows.
Yeah, in the meantime, go double-check those files, because the Awans have copies of everything stored.
That is true.
That was the other thing, too. They were storing things on other servers. We got to take another quick break to celebrate capitalism.
When you come back, I want to talk about the missing equipment.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. I can't believe our first hour is almost over.
Yeah, because Debbie never got
hers
back.
So much
She's
more.
Mad about that. She wants it.
And there
it
was
back.
Some they left in the Longworth building. I mean, there's just so much.
Yeah. I mean, in a paper bag.
Yeah, yeah. With documents and a note. It's like, oh, God.
And his ID.
That's right. I forgot about that.
That was an accident.
There were no breadcrumbs, but it was really close.
Yeah.
Breadcrumbs were just an oversight.
The absent-minded.
You know, he
spy.
Was foreign. He didn't know about the breadcrumb thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr.
We're going to come right back with Chuck Floyd. We're talking about the Awan brothers.
You can write a book on the trouble with the woman and a man, but you cannot impose. You can't stick your nose into something that you don't understand.
Give Rama
a whirl. I thought I knew.
run, but you can't hide, Debbie. I told Bob, I go, this show's going to be like a musical candy store.
Oh, musical gold today.
It is, too.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about stolen equipment and where does it possibly end up?
Okay, well, you know, first of all, you know, you talked about the phone booth. Well, April 6, 2017, he leaves a laptop in a small room, formerly as served as a phone booth in the Rayburn House office building.
Who's in Rayburn?
According to the Capitol Police. And in there, alongside the laptop, was his Pakistani ID, copies of his driver's license, and congressional ID badge, and letters to the U.S. attorney. And so how does he have a Virginia's driver's license, a Pakistani ID, he's a U.S. citizen? Is this what dual citizenship is all about?
So why would he do that? Obviously, he did that on purpose. He left that for them to find.
Yes.
To what ends?
Well, we don't know.
He was rolling on somebody.
This is all part of, you know, when they gathered all the information and finally arrested him right before he died on a flight. Because he had booked a flight through, I think it was Dubai, into Pakistan.
And his wife had already taken off.
She left in March. She said, enough of this stuff. I know what's going to happen. I'm leaving.
She had a ton of cash on her, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And they let her go.
So do you think he was just like thumbing his nose at everybody and, hey, I'm out of here. Here's what I had. And he thought he was going to, like, get on the plane and be gone for good. You think that was the plan?
That's what he thought. He thought he was protected by Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That's what he thought.
Well, he had been for years. So, I mean, why would that change? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he thought. I mean, so finally the police and others just wised up and go, hey, we need to get this guy before he gets out of country because we'll never see him again.
So do you think there was something that instigated him to leave that stuff in that phone booth? I mean, something must have happened where he knew he was, you know, caught. So he pulled the plug on the whole deal and was going to get on a plane and split.
Yes. He saw it coming crashing down, and he knew that he was not long before the authorities were going to arrest him, and that Debbie Wasserman Schultz would not be able to protect him anymore. And so I feel that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing that makes it, I mean, all of it is, you know, to say that it's all crazy is just the overstatement, you know, complete understatement, sorry. But the House has three office buildings, Rayburn, Longworth, and Cannon. And right. Wasserman Schultz's office is in Longworth. Yep. And so if that's where you're working, why would, you know, he would have no
why would he be in the Rayburn building?
Yeah,
correct.
Exactly.
Besides the fact that's the same laptop that Wasserman Schultz went hooks with Capitol Police over. She wasn't going to turn that over. How dare they have that, blah, blah, blah. She wasn't giving it to him.
So there must have been something on that one.
And he left it there. Marked, you know, and it was marked that it was belonged to her.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, to me, he probably thought that he was being followed by somebody from her staff.
Ooh.
And so he did not want to leave it in that building where he worked. And so he went to a different building, left it there, because I am sure she has somebody following him and trying to figure out what he was doing.
Well, the best part is, after she reamed the Capitol Police, this happens. And the little part of the article I liked, my favorite part, she changed her story 2 months later, claiming it was a Juan's laptop bought with taxpayer funds from her office, and she had never seen it. She said she only saw it to protect his rights. It was not my laptop, she said on August 3rd. I've never seen that laptop, and I don't know what's on that laptop. Those are direct quotes.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
how would you like to be the guy getting that statement?
Come on.
I mean, that's like Podesta and Clinton and all of them saying that. I have no idea what happened to Uranium One.
I have never met that man. I've never seen him.
Nope.
Wait a minute. What blue dress? What is the definition of
is? I did not have relations with that woman.
I'm not. It's just, wow. I mean, these guys are, it's really bizarre, but it's almost like, you know, when I was a kid and you played with paper dolls, you know, you cut them all and you string them out, they all look the same. That's these guys. They're all actually cut the same way, and when you stretch it out, it's just a long string of repetitive little figures.
Doesn't this really have the... I mean, he should have the potential of bringing this whole thing down. I mean, he's got to have information that...
Well, we haven't even gotten to the houses either. We got to... The houses are kind of interesting. Yeah. Can we go there when we come back?
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the equipment first.
Oh, yeah.
I
sorry.
Got there. All right.
I got all tangled up in the phone booth. The phone booth is so much fun. Okay. Okay,
you know,
phone booth. We got equipment. We've got houses. Oh, it's going to get better. Stick with us. We're going to come back with our guest, Chuck Floyd. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And today is an action-packed saga. Probably fit for Hollywood, but it would have to go in the category of fiction because nobody would actually believe this was a true story.
Yeah, but you could put based on a true story
at the beginning. It's just so bizarre that people would think you were making it up. And some of the stuff is just kind of, I mean, it's just crazy. You look at it and you think, God, what were they thinking?
Yeah. If I even thought about doing some of that stuff, I'd be in jail.
It's true. You know? If you emailed someone about it, they'd be on your porch.
Oh, yeah, they'd be on me.
These guys actually did it. So lots of information today from our guest, Chuck Floyd. And I did post all the Daily Caller articles about this, and there are several dozen of them. So I did put them on the webpage if you would like to go back and look through this. I'm not kidding you. This isn't boring old blah, 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 what happened on the Hill, a bunch of insider, blah, blah. I mean, this is good stuff. This is amazingly juicy and bizarre. And I don't know, Chuck, what do you think? You think they're going to get in trouble?
I mean, I kind of think they're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Well, if nobody knows what he knew and nobody knows what he actually did except, even the investigators, they would have the option of just keeping the whole thing quiet and slapping everybody's wrist. But
you've got the Capitol Police, you've got the FBI, you have a whole lot of people involved in this.
I mean, you've got to bring it out, I would think. They couldn't hide it.
Well, okay, so let's talk about equipment.
Yeah, where is it?
Because there was a lot of it.
Yep. So, for an example, you know, he was hired in 2005. 2009, equipment started missing. From what I can go back and look at and really ascertain. Then in August 20th of 2017, the House Democrat office approved a $120,000 write-off linked to the Unwin brothers regarding the former chief of staff for Republican Clark, Democrat New York. And so the missing equipment tied to Clark's office included iPhones, iPads, and $120,000 just for her office. Just for her office. At $800 each, there would be enough for $120,000 that you would account for 150 items.
Jeez.
But she only has 16 employees.
Yeah, how's that work?
And
yet to get reimbursed for a cattleman dinner that was 20, yep. 25 bucks, you have to have 19 receipts and a canceled check.
That's it. And so this is just one Democrat office where equipment was missing. This does not account for the 70-some Democrats that were involved in this scheme.
Yeah, 79.
79.
And, yeah, it's and then let's talk about the all the equipment that the guy found he's a retired Marine.
Yeah, he's a retired Marine.
Retired Marine when he rented the house that belonged to Imran Awan. I know, I like that one too.
That is true. I mean, you know, he called the police, and I think he called the FBI too. He goes, "What is this?"
And what did he find?
He had like a garage full of stuff, right?
Yeah, he found a garage full of stuff, and they, you know, went through it, they collected it, and, you know, they find out a lot of it was ordered, paid for by the taxpayer. And again, because of all of the shipments to his home, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and none of the other Democrats really paid any attention to what he was doing, what he was ordering, and he had all this stuff shipped to his house, and they thought it was going to be for their office and whatever. I don't know what they thought, but nobody kept track of anything. And, you know, I'm retired military. In the military, we kept track of every item on our property books. We knew exactly how many iPads, how many computers, how many printers, how many desks, how many chairs, et cetera, we had. Evidently, the Democrats in the House of Representatives they want to tell everybody else how to do their business, but they don't want to take care of their own.
Yeah. I'm looking at the article. This was from July. That's right. July was a very good month for this story. Well, if you were following it, not if you were in it. Taggart, he's a Marine Corps veteran, moved in and said he found wireless routers, hard drives that looked like they had tried to destroy them, laptops, and a lot of brand new expensive toner. He called the authorities. Mm-hmm. FBI agents arrived with the Capitol Police to interview him and confiscate the equipment. Quote from him, he says, it was in the garage. They recycled cabinets and lined them along the walls. They left in a hurry. It looks like government-issued equipment. We turned all that stuff over.
Yep. And it's one item in there that very corresponds very, very much to Hillary Clinton. they had hard drives that looked like they were being destroyed and hit with a hammer.
Right. Surprise, surprise. And he said that Imram wanted the hard drives back so desperately that he threatened to sue him as the renter. He's a brand new renter. He threatened to sue the renter for stealing them. The Marine says, it was unbelievable. I don't know where they get off thinking they're going to sue us for items we have no obligation to hold on to. And he came to the house like three or four times, but the guy wouldn't let him in. He's a huge guy, too. The Marine.
Yeah,
is.
I wouldn't threaten that guy. Yeah,
there's a picture of him on the article. It's like, huh.
It's like Rambo.
But, he said, when we first moved in, a mailman came with certified mail from the House of Representatives. We were trying to be nice and signed for it. They lost their poop, saying, why did you sign for it? This is illegal. It was certified from the chief administrative officer of the House, he said. The postman came a second time with a certified letter, and I called Imram on the spot asking, what do you want me to do? He said, just send them away. I'm homeless.
I'm homeless.
I don't think he's homeless.
He's a guy who owned, here you have members of Congress, you know, camped out in little 300-square-foot apartments because housing is so expensive, and all these guys in this conspiracy... all the Pakistani guys had multiple homes.
Yeah.
Homes. They were doing okay.
Yeah. Hina, H-I-N-A, a very A-L-B-I, owned two homes.
Right. How's that working? And they never go to work.
Yeah. That's
they work
right.
Some McDonald's.
I mean, the House IT people are like, we never saw them. And we don't know really what they were doing.
That's right. And then they tried to get a second mortgage from the House Congressional Bank from where they were renting other houses, and they were trying to get a mortgage from the bank for rented houses. And they didn't even have to prove they owned the house.
What the heck? But, of course, this is all, if you go back to, if we flip back over to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, this is all about Islamophobia, by the way.
Yes.
Just so we all get our story straight.
Yeah. That's like Hillary saying Russia's old news. It's all about sexism now. Let's just get off the Russia thing. That whole thing's taking an ugly
turn.
It's
all about H.W. Bush, George H.W. Bush slapping somebody on the fanny. That's what it's about. Yeah. That's the real drama here.
Let's make news about that.
He's 92, but hey, what the hell? Can we say hell? That's too late. Okay, so what else, what else in the equipment world have we missed?
Well, when he was hired as a shared employee part-time to install printers and, help people with their laptops when they would get them, help set up, passcodes and this and that, whatever. And it just developed into something really mega where he was the only guy that the Democrats went to especially Deborah Weissman Schultz, especially when she moved to the DNC. And again, you got to really go back and figure out what was going on.
Exactly.
Why did she give him this much power, this much access, and trusted him? And so again, you know, in the IT world today, we have a new thing called blockchain, and it's mainly for healthcare IT, that sort of thing, where you divide stuff into little segments, you lock it down, and then you can't hack it. And so, you know, nobody goes by any of the new tools and procedures in the house. I think the house, really, investigation has to be on the house IT, is what they're doing, why they're doing it, why didn't they know all of this, why don't they track things and know at every endpoint who's doing what.
Right.
Yeah.
Who does the house IT?
I think the Awans are going to learn about blockchain, though.
Yeah.
I do. Just a different version of it.
Who do they answer to? I mean, is there like a committee that they answer to, or are they just a congressman walks up and they just step to? Or
there's like a ton of rules. I don't know
work?
How they got away with all this.
It, you know, I for, as far as I know, it's handled by the sergeant of arms, but, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of all the IT stuff. I know what should be done, but I don't know what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they control things. It just looks like to me that it's very hit or miss, and they don't control anything.
No, obviously not.
But it's a hassle. I mean, to get a cell phone, to they're always doing updates. They've got all these stupid trainings you have to do. You know, don't open emails that are in foreign languages that look like they might have, you know. I mean, there's a lot of... if you're an honest person, it looks like there's a lot of security, but apparently these guys are not. And it's funny because there was another story here beginning of September. Awan asks judge to remove GPS, citing possible emergency with kids in Pakistan. I mean
not a flight risk.
I think that's called hubris, huh?
If you see an email from Awan, open it.
Yeah, right. Open that one first. It's going to be a good one. But you'll probably go to prison.
You know, one of the very strange things that I see is his father is called, his name is Mohammed Shah. You know, I think he died. But why did they change their name? I mean, you go back and look at the family name and everything else, and they just changed. So,
that is
very
interesting.
Strange.
That is kind of weird. And then we haven't even gotten into the whole mother-in-law who said they basically held her captive.
She sued them. Yeah. And, you know, they forged the father's signature. I mean,
yeah, on what, his will, so they could snag his assets in Pakistan, right?
Right.
more. And we're going to do a little celebration of capitalism here for a couple of minutes, and so we can all get some water, because all this laughing is really drying my throat out. It's kind of making me cough a little bit. Oh my gosh! We'll be right back with our guest Chuck Floyd. We are talking about the Awan Brothers and Company. And if you have not followed this story, I'm sorry, but it's not too late to catch up. It's not over yet.
They're not available for hire at the moment.
Yeah, their IT services are kind of under wraps.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Where don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying,
we're exploiting other people's grief.
Absolutely.
I like it.
That's the best kind. Hey, Chuck, I got a question.
Good song, Bob.
How does somebody who is suspected of what I would consider a fairly high-level crime, how does he get out with an ankle bracelet?
Well, that's going to be a good question. That's why I think Louis Gohmert should be really focusing in on this thing and getting Attorney General Jeff Sessions wired up on this and let them have a special prosecutor to go after this, because you're going to find all kinds of Democrat congressmen and women involved. You're going to find Deborah Wasserman Schultz heavily involved. You're going to find really key issues for the House IT area. And again, you know, was this guy just a scammer and, you know, try to take advantage of the systems and whatever? I mean, I remember growing up as a kid that, you know, one of the famous former bank robbers was asked, why do you rob banks? And he said, well, that's where the money is.
So, maybe he figured out where the money is.
Bonus.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's a Pakistani, you know, he's an American citizen, you know, he find that where he could really get in and do something and not have accountability.
You can't blame a guy for trying, huh?
You know, I'm not in law enforcement or anything, but when
have you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express?
I have played one on TV. you turn somebody like that loose, and it seems to me that you're just giving them the opportunity to run around and talk to all parties involved and get the story straight for when.
Well, the good news is they suck at it, so.
Well, that's true.
It's probably not going to help them all that much.
Maybe that's why they gave him ankle braces. They're going to see.
Please go meet with everybody.
They're going to see where the crumbs go. Ah, it's crazy.
It was crazy because when he was put on the GPS and all that and he was arrested, I'm looking at the article on that, and Wasserman Schultz's quotes are priceless. She said it's absurd to conclude he was fleeing the country. They were being persecuted. Their children were being bullied at school. They were experiencing things I was concerned about in terms of racial, ethnic, and religious profiling. Really?
Wow.
And so this caused them to have multiple homes and start a car business called the CIA and deal with Hezbollah. And I mean, what the heck?
I mean, you know, I started really focusing in on this in January through March of this past year, and warning people in the administration and other organizations. Judicial Watch was very instrumental in trying to get information. But back in January, Awan called his bank from the Longworth House building, trying to impersonate his wife. in order to transfer $283,000 into Pakistan to two other individuals.
Huh.
And so when his bank said, well, what's the reason? He goes, well, I have to make funeral arrangements. And then the bank operator, the person at the bank said, it's going to cost that much for a funeral? He goes, oh, no, well, we're going to buy property also. And so
while we're at it,
we're going to do a little shopping.
Yeah, and so they transferred almost $300,000 way back in January into two other people's names in Pakistan.
Hmm. Unbelievable. And so tell me this. How exactly do you think Wasserman Schultz is getting away with this so far? She's looking a little haggard, though. I don't think it's actually wearing well on her.
I think she's very worried. I think if the DOJ will start investigating this, they're going to see a long trail of things that she and many other Democrats do not want out in the open. So, you know, from this radio show or from Gohmert's House committee hearing, something has to happen and really have a fresh eyes and investigation in on this thing and follow this all the way from 2005 all the way to now, because there have been multiple crimes, all kinds of things going on in the shadows of protecting this guy.
You know, I know there's a lot going on with the AG right now, and there's plenty of things to investigate. It just seems kind of odd to me that something of this magnitude, and you know, maybe it's not a big deal, maybe this stuff goes on all the time, doesn't sound like it to me, but it seems like the AG would have already been involved or at least started some kind of an investigation into this. Do you think Sessions is on it, or do you think he's just waiting to see what is it, the FBI or the Capitol Police or whatever they turn up?
I know the Capitol Police, FBI have been involved. You know, if they're putting, I don't know whether they're putting priority on this, but they should, because not only did he misappropriate it, and did she misappropriate taxpayer funds, stolen property, there's huge national security issues on this.
All joking aside, and, yes, absolutely.
And so that is very important for the IC community and many others. And so this has to be investigated and has to be followed the entire trail to really correct this and make sure that the House IT, both the House and the Senate IT enterprises are secure, because right now they're not.
No. No, obviously.
And what about all the houses and the property and all that? Are they still, I haven't seen anything come through that those assets were seized or any of that. Right now it's all sort of, you know, hanging.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything where they've been forfeited or seized. I would assume that they're just in limbo right now, waiting for the investigation and what's going to happen to him and whether he's going to forfeit all that money back to the federal government for what he stole. So I don't know, but you know, that's, yeah, I have no idea.
Right. Well, and he used different names, threatened to harm his stepmother when he signed over his dad's will and went and stripped all the assets from there. But she said that he and the brother had her as like a virtual prisoner. They said they can do whatever they want. They have so much power. Mm-hmm. If she tried to thwart them or called the police or whatever, that they'd, I don't know if they said they'd kill her, but I think it was right in there.
Right. Yeah. They denied her access to the hospital where he was. And then, he also, signed his father's name. And so, again, all this stuff is, not legal. And with her complaint to the local Fairfax, I guess it was Fairfax police, that's where a lot of this stuff started. Her name was Samina, Samina.
Uh-huh.
Now, has the rest of the family pretty much left the country, or are they still present and accounted for?
As far as I know, his one brother left. The rest of the family is still here, and all his friends and others that he had hired are still here. And so, again, the FBI and other law enforcement agencies can grab them, question them, put pressure on them, and put pressure on him.
Well, on the 4th, our good friend, the reporter, Luke Rosiak there, he said that the House Democrats ordered the systematic falsification of records showing how they spend their taxpayer-provided office budgets. And that seems to be kind of a theme, and that starts to make sense. One of the quotes in here is, the only reason you're not seeing charges is because the Democrats who employed Imran Awan are not cooperating. A senior Republican, and this was from a senior Republican congressional official.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
that is, you're absolutely correct, because if you look at who's at Gomer's hearings, no Democrat shows up.
Big shocker.
Mm. Never heard of him.
What?
What?
Yeah, what?
Him who?
He never showed up for work. We didn't pay. What? Yeah. They paid him? Oh, those idiots in personnel. Are you kidding me? It all drops on HR.
Oh, yeah.
Those dummies, they paid him. I mean, there's all this inventory control that should be going on that wasn't. And then the money, just the money, the massive data. When we come back, can you talk about some of the data that's stored offsite and why that's such a big deal?
Sure.
I think most people would kind of know it's a big deal, but maybe you could explain why, because we don't deal with that so much. All right. I don't know. I feel like I'm laughed out, but it's going to come back. Oh, I had to take a little break that segment. I couldn't laugh anymore. It's just starting to hurt. We'll be right back.
You're holding back on me when you say you're giving all. And in the dungeons of your mind, who you got chained to the wall?
Tell it all, brother, before we fall. Tell it all, brothers and sisters.
Spill it to one family. Ah, the Awan family theme song. At least we hope. So in the hypocrisy section of the program, I found a lovely quote in one of the articles here from their attorney. He says, there's nothing that Imran did that wasn't requested by one of his clients on House staff. Huh, imagine that. So then in commentary, the reporter says that the House member's muted response is difficult to square with the fact that Democrats were the ones whose data was in jeopardy, and they have spoken passionately about the importance of cybersecurity, particularly in the context of Russia, Russia, Russia. 15 of the 17 female members of Congress tied to the Awans would not even express concern to the Daily Caller when provided with police reports showing multiple women called the police on Imran, with one saying she felt, quote, like a slave. Where are those women's rights and those pink hats and all that stuff? Huh. All right. So.
Because nobody picked them to be part of a harem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In other news, back to you, Chuck.
Well, you know, you just talked about his attorney, Christopher Golan.
Yes.
He made a statement that his client had a very lax environment surrounding security products in the House, so he could not be held responsible.
Oh,
but he was the cybersecurity expert, supposedly.
Really? Nobody ever told him he couldn't do that, so he didn't know.
You know what? He was a slob, and he was a little absent-minded, and he lost all the equipment. He can't possibly be expected to know where it is.
Well, where he comes from, all that stuff's okay. So he just assumed that you couldn't do that here, and
One
other thing I want to talk about on the computer equipment, he had certain vendors bill the House below $500, because if you bill above $500, then it's tracked. And so he would have iPads and others that cost $800,000-$900,000 or whatever. He had the contractors bill him $499. And then they both billed multiple invoices for those items.
Sure.
And so he tried to keep it below the radar screen. And so, this guy was, really, he knew the rules. He knew what was going on. And he tried to really circumvent the rules and regulations at every corner.
So apparently that part of the training, he paid attention. Yeah, the other part about the security, he left the room.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. And just to make sure your listeners really realize what was going on, all of his family members were paid between $157,000 and $168,000 a year, and the highest paid congressional staffer is only paid $174,000. And these guys, only he had IT experience, graduated from college. All the rest of them did not have any formal IT training whatsoever.
Huh.
And they were hauling down that kind of taxpayer. I mean, people's wallets should be crying right now.
That's it. Absolutely. And, you know, you just wonder, you know, why did she protect him? What was she hiding? What did he have on her as far as that she did not want exposed?
Well, she doesn't particularly strike me as a stupid woman. So, I mean,
he's got to have something.
There's
got
to be
great on her.
Got to be something.
Yep, absolutely.
Do you think?
Anyhow, I just want to bring that up before we go on into the other areas.
We don't want to leave any candy jars untapped at the candy store. Okay, so what about stowing data offline? Why would you do that? And I mean, besides the obvious, doesn't sound like a good idea. What is the risk?
If you look at hackers, they hack information from hotels, from Equifax, from, you know, even OPM, you know, and so they gather all this data and then they sell it on the dark web. And so on the dark web, you can go on and see if your information is there. I mean, China hacked OPM and my information and everybody else's information from OPM is there. And so that's already gone. And so the individuals, the hackers, will put it on the dark web and they'll sell it, you know, to people that want information financially. They want information on who's who, what jobs do you have, what kind of social network do you have, so that they can map out who in the government is doing what. And then they can get in through your kid's computer, your personal computer, your personal iPhone or whatever, into the government systems that they want to get into.
Well, yeah, they just basically, you know, especially on the social media side, which I never understood why people put so much information there, but, no. You know, they get that information, and then guess what? Somebody bumps into you at the coffee shop, strikes up a conversation, next thing you know,
bing,
boom, 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 and...
Well, the OPM leak, the Office of Personnel Management... I get these confused because there's been so much of this stuff, but weren't they the ones that had their programming created by a Chinese company and then magically the Chinese hacked it?
Yeah, that was part of it. But again, OPM was warned 2 years in advance that their system was not secure and they needed to do something and they never did.
And those are all federal employees' records.
Yes, yeah, well, all federal employees, all retired military, all kinds of stuff, you know, all federal employees,
sure.
Yes.
Now, when you say records, are we talking name, address, phone number, taxes? I mean, how deep does that go?
Well, if they're personnel management, they do your direct deposit, they got your bank account and everything else.
Yeah, they have everything. They know where you live, they know everything. Because, you know, when you OPM, they have your full record.
Yeah, and that is so dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why this blockchain is so important, because if OPM has certain records, they shouldn't have your financial and other things, and then the agencies that pay you should have that and not the other stuff. So, again, you know, when the federal government started sharing information with all the different agencies, again, sometimes it's good, but lots of times it's bad, because you know, the hackers can get in through one agency and then they go to another agency to get the information.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, sharing. Overrated.
But you'll get names of people that, you know, may not want other people to know who they are and what they do. And
sure.
You put their home address and everything down. I mean, that
not helpful.
You're just looking for disaster. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at China, Russia, all these nation-state hackers, they want to know who is in the government. They want to know who's in what industry, because, you know, the Chinese hack Boeing. They hack everybody. So, you know, they want to know who's who and how do they get in through these different networks and channels in order to get copies of planes to, you know, IT stuff to, you know, whatever they want. And so the Chinese have been doing this for years and years and years. We know it, and that's why President Trump is so intent on shutting down the Chinese because of the IP issue.
Yeah. See, and so when they're taking this data off the house server and putting it offline? Are they just storing it there so they can sell it, go through it later? I mean, what's the...
Well, it's all of the above. They can do all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because one hacker will provide information, or another hacker will provide information, and if it's a nation state, they have different agencies in a nation state, going into different agencies and computer systems, and they'll bring all that back together, and then they'll run it and compare it. Then that way, they have more information about what's going on and who's who.
Jeez. So, what are the? I mean, I'm sure it says in the rules that you can't take things off the house server and store it. So, if they find that they've done that, what kind of a crime is that? I mean, besides cybercrime, is that a big crime? A medium? Is it extra large, large, medium, small?
Well, I think you'll have to ask Hillary Clinton, because she did it at State Department and nothing's happened to her.
Yeah, so, did set a bad precedent there.
Is the government good about following up on people breaking the law? No.
Yeah, it's kind of like California with, car thefts and all that. They reduce the penalty for all sorts of felonies. So,
don't have as many people in prison.
We don't have a lot of felonies anymore. I was at a law enforcement meeting the other day in our area up here in Northern California. It's probably happening elsewhere too, but I know for sure it's happening here. They are literally stealing cars just to drive from one place to another so they don't have to take the bus.
You could get a ticket for that.
they're not really stealing the car to keep it so that they have a car. They're just like, I need to get from this town to that town. I'm going to steal your car, drive over there,
and just
leave it and do my, do my drug deal or whatever I'm doing, visiting my friends, stealing a different car to go home because nothing happens.
It's like bike share in Washington, D.C.
There you go.
Exactly.
Everything about Washington, D.C. is coming out here. What the heck?
Check the saddlebags on those bikes. There might be a laptop in there.
Yep. Totally. Check for Imram's ankle bracelet. You might be making his GPS active. So, crud, we've got to take another break for capitalism. Darn capitalism keeps popping in.
Bite your tongue.
I know. Good capitalism. It's just so inconvenient. Inconvenient capitalism. All right, we'll be back with our guest, Chuck Floyd. We are talking about the Awan brothers and the massive, wide-ranging scandal that is involved in that. You can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Put me in jail if I fail to give you all the love that's yours. Put me in jail if I fail in loving you. I stood before the jury. It was an ugly scene, 'cause they could see right through me how lonely I had been. So put me in jail if I fail to give you all the love that's yours. Put me in jail.
That brings me to my next alert. This would be the multiple girlfriend alert. Apparently, Mr. Awan, while he wasn't running a car dealership called the CIA and doing business with Hezbollah and swiping all sorts of computer equipment and getting his family members ghost IT jobs with 79 members of Congress, he had two girlfriends on the side. He was, this guy was probably under a lot of stress.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, it makes perfect sense why he left all that stuff in that guy's house that he rented to
him.
Tried
to get out of the country.
He got all tangled up. He had girlfriends that were mad at him, and his mother-in-law said he tried to hold her captive.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
So, Chuck, what do you think the timeline here is? Any guesses as to how long it's going to be before DOJ cracks this thing and it hits the front page? Because it's really been kind of a back story.
This has been the simmering pot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've thought a lot about this, and my main question is, why hasn't Speaker Ryan and others in Congress put a hard court press on this thing? Why haven't they said anything about it? Why haven't they pressed the issue?
Yeah.
You don't see anything in the media. You don't see anything in the Washington Post or anywhere else, any of the reporters going after this except for a couple. And so, you know, unless Speaker Ryan and members of the House really put a focus on this issue, I don't think anything's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
Here, just, 2 weeks ago, the polygamy charges came out. I mean, this is everything. Everything.
Yep.
And it involves massive amounts of data. If they have, we never did talk about the 123 at mail.house.gov. He's got some sort of secure access.
Still has access.
Sounds like he still does. Do you know about that one?
Mm-hmm. I think they pulled everything from him. As far as I know, they have. But again, I don't know everything. But from what I understand, they pulled it.
Okay.
And you know, it's just like the Uranium One deal. Why didn't the House and the Senate do investigations, all of this stuff, way back then?
Yeah.
I mean, they've known about this for 2 years in the House, and Speaker Ryan and others have not brought it to the attention of the American people. I don't know whether they want to cover it up or whether they just know that the IT system at the House is so poorly run that they don't want the light shined on it. I don't know what the problem is, but they've got to step up to the plate and really spearhead this thing so that DOJ does their job, and we need to see some heads roll.
Well, what's the connection with Capitol Police, FBI, and all that? I mean, I realize they're all different, but they all seem to be going after the same thing.
Well, again, it's just like what's going on in Las Vegas. You don't hear one word about anything anymore about that whole episode out there.
That's true.
And so the House is supposed to follow protocol with the Capitol Police, and then from there they get an FBI and others involved in whatever. And so, again, it's territorial. It's divided up. But somebody's got to take this thing and run with it and be in charge.
Yeah. Well, if FBI has all of those, I mean, I try to be understanding that the process isn't always public, but is it possible that the FBI is working on it with all the stuff that they've gotten from all the hard drives and the laptops and all these things? Could they be working on it and we're just not seeing anything? Is it like
it could be
ducks,
I mean,
where their feet are moving fast under the water?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, the FBI is really involved in a lot of things from the Obama administration. So who knows? But again, I think the Attorney General needs to put a focus and tell the American people that there is a focus on this particular issue, because it is a national security fraud, waste of taxpayers' money, and people really need to go to jail on this.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is like a mafia don. You know, she was heading up the DNC and doling out ghost IT workers. You will have this one. You know, hire them. They're never going to show up and write off this equipment. And, you know, it looks like people have been pressed into doing all sorts of things they can get in trouble for. So there's got to be something big underneath the surface of this iceberg.
I totally agree with you, and you know, they got an investigation to see where it leads, because they are hiding valuable information on probably things illegally that they were doing, and they don't want anybody to know about it.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible. You know, a lot of these investigations go on for years before they actually pull the trigger. You know, they're going to have all their ducks in a row and everything ready to roll before they you know, make it public. So I guess we can only hope that they are working on it.
But the main guys have to be. I mean, have they? I haven't really paid attention exactly to the charges. So he's on a GPS, but what's he been charged with?
That I don't know. I don't know exactly what he's been charged with.
I don't think it's ever said. I don't think I've ever read anything.
It's not public. Yeah, it's not public. We don't know.
This thing is just too big to just disappear and go away. I think there's something's gonna blow wide open on this one, because I truly believe there are players involved in this that are not gonna go to jail for the people at the top, and I think we all know who that.
Well, I think leaving the IDs and the laptop and all that in the Rayburn building, that I mean. Hey, if I was a bad guy, I'd be telegraphing my move by doing something like that.
I mean, you're getting more leaks out of Mueller's office than you're out of this.
Yeah, true. True story. This has been pretty quiet, but I have to say, you got to know something's going on under the surface, because not that she was ever a looker, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz is looking pretty haggard these days.
Yeah.
Every time you see her, it's like, oh, boy.
Not looking bubbly.
Nah, she's looking a little rugged. So the pressure's got to be mounting. Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Yeah, no kidding, Chuck. Thanks for coming on.
This has been an amazing story.
We're going to follow this, and we're going to need you back for an update for sure.
Yeah, you know what? If you do hear anything that's going on, maybe that – you know, isn't out in the, I mean, I seriously, I get the daily caller updates on my phone, on my computer, on my work computer. If they write anything, boom, it pops up, because I don't want to miss the next installment of the Awan brothers. But if you hear something, we want to know.
Okay. We want the exclusive.
I'll keep everybody informed as far as what I hear and what I know. And you do the same. You know, we just got to make sure that we put the pressure on and to make sure that DOJ does their job on this thing, and, you know, get Speaker Ryan to really push this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Chuck, for joining us. And it was a pretty fun time. I mean, you know, we took a bad story and we had a pretty good time with it. So
we laughed a lot.
If we get any points for mocking, I believe we got a 10 from the East German judge today.
Thanks,
all right,
Chuck.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, take care. Bye.
All right, folks, we'll be on with something else fun next week. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to KCNR's Shasta Redding.